Tom Gerhart and Dan Provost are the guys behind Studio Neat. On this show, we discuss entrepreneurship, product design, and all of the ups and downs that come with running a small business. I'm Mike Hurley, and this is Thoroughly Considered. Dan, how old is Studio Neat? How long have you been doing this?
Oh, since 2010. It's coming up on 14 years.
Okay. 14, nearly 15 years. Is the Mark II Mark II, which is what I'll call it, is this the first time you've redesigned a product, like made significant changes to a product?
No, not if you include the glyph. Yeah, it's a little different. I mean, we made revisions, you know, for the iPhone 4 to iPhone 5 transition, and then we...
But those are like forced, kind of, you know?
Yeah, but then we fully redesigned it to be adjustable, and then fully redesigned it again. So I guess the answer to your question is
They're different in a way, because it's like, here's a new thing,
yeah.
Right? Like, here's a new thing. But this is like, oh... We've tweaked a thing. And maybe the difference is that, like, you did this based on something that you felt, as opposed to even when you redesigned the glyph to meet its final ultimate form, It was based around, like, there are external pressures that were forcing you to do it, that the phones would not stop getting bigger.
Yeah, and it's also interesting, like, what do we... This is obviously a big enough change to merit a kind of marketing push of, like, this is... Yeah. But the Mark One basically changes every time we do a production run, but they're kind of changes that are invisible to the customer. And so...
That's for you.
Yeah, really. They improve either... reliability or assembly or some other aspect of the manufacturing, but externally it doesn't really change at all. And so, yeah, it's like this kind of pushed over the threshold of like, oh yeah, we want to make this change. I mean, there are a lot of, we knew we wanted to change how it was kind of put together and assembled, because the process of attaching the clip and getting the magnet down in there had a lot of room for improvement. It was a real pain point on the assembly side. And so we knew that was going to be re-architected. And so we took that change as an opportunity to just reevaluate, like, do we want to change anything else? Like, how do we feel about this thing? And we kind of arrived at, we kind of asked ourselves, do we need to support the Fisher refill still? Because if we don't, we can make this thing way smaller. Because the original Mark II is like longer than the Schmidt Mini refill to accommodate that Fisher. But if you remove that requirement, you can shrink it down by over a centimeter. And so like months ago, maybe a year ago, a while ago, we put out like an informal poll on like Mastodon and Instagram, I think, like, hey, Mark II users, do you use the Fisher refill in your Mark II? And it was a double digit percentage, but it was low. It was like 12% or 15% or something of the people that responded.
And so people were swapping out the refill for something else.
Yeah, they were taking out the Mini and putting in the Fisher. And those are the only two refills that are like officially supported by it.
Which is the Schmidt Mini, which is a small version of what is in the Mark One.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Or the Fisher. I mean, look, I don't like the Fisher refill. Never liked the Fisher refill. Mm-hmm. I think it's very good at doing what it does. Mm-hmm. If you need a pen to do what it does, like if you need a pen to write upside down and underwater and in space,
like really rugged.
Yeah.
It's there for you. But I have never really enjoyed the experience of writing with that refill.
It's kind of scratchy.
The Schmidt refill is the superior refill for standard writing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. It's a totally, the Fisher is a totally different use case, I think. And I was glad to support it in the original version, because I think there is this kind of desire in the EDC world of like the super, it's not about writing experience. It's about kind of like robustness and this like reliable thing that's not going to smear or bleed. Like it's a ballpoint. It's pretty like straightforward. But I think the reason we convinced ourselves it was okay to drop that support, aside from the fairly low percentage of people that actually use that, is we have a plan in the future to make an adapter for D1 style refills, which are like these skinny little refills that are meant for like multi-pens. Is that what they're called? Like where you can fit a, you know, you could fit like, you've seen those pens like from childhood where you have like six different colors and you can like click to like switch out the refills. They're like skinny little things. They're called D1 refills. And so we're going to make an adapter to support those. And so that then opens it back up to, there is a Fisher D1 version. So if you're in love with Fisher as a concept, now that will be supported again.
Is it still pressurized?
I believe so.
Probably. Huh. Yeah, because it's like, interesting. It's just, I would imagine.
Okay.
Yeah. But now, but it opens the door to other D1 refills too. So in a way, we...
Of which there are lots of options and colors.
Yeah, and colors.
Which people might enjoy, yeah. Right? Like, because you can get lots of different colored multi-pens.
Right.
So that would be fun if you wanted a green one.
Exactly. So initially...
That felt like a good trade-off.
It seemed like we were being kind of more restrictive. It's like, oh, we're dropping support for this thing. But actually, you know, once we have the adapter, it actually opens it up to support for these other refills. So that feels good. It's still, you know, it's on our to-do. It's in the queue to actually make that adapter and get it into production. But it felt like a good... I said many times before, design is compromise, design is trade-offs. Yep. And so that was a trade-off that felt like a pretty good one.
Yeah.
I think it's a trade-up. I mean, because like what you've also been able to do is make the pen smaller, which makes more sense for what it is. It's meant to be a small pen. You made the pen smaller. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
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 And no clip option.
Yeah. The no clip option is really kind of makes it more like Dan and I before probably like a quarter of the way through development, we're both like, we want a clipless one. but the original. Because it's just so little and like simple and like this slick thing. Mm-hmm. Now the clip is really cool on the Mark II. It's like a really cool clip. And so
if you were ever going to offer an option, like this is the pen that should have a clip. Like it should.
Yeah. It makes total sense.
It is an EDC pen. Like it's almost like if to make a pen like this and not have a version with a clip on it, it's kind of like you shouldn't really make the pen. Mm-hmm. I feel, right? Like I do understand it. Even though the Fisher Space pen doesn't have a clip, but like whatever. Yeah. I think there are clip versions. Though clip on clips are no good.
No dice.
They're not good.
Don't like a clip on clip. So I really actually like the Mark II, and now that it's much easier for us to assemble and much more reliable and like completely, like it can be repaired completely. Like I just like it a lot more. I develop these like biases towards the things we make, depending on how much of a pain they are for us, like internally.
I can see that. Like I understand that. Like if something is difficult to make, you kind of don't like it.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, you might. Like, you don't want to, like, invest in, like, the marketing because you don't want to sell more exactly because they're a pain. So the Mark II, the new one, like, all those things are fixed. And so I like it a lot better. I've actually been using it. I just, like, keep it posted at my desk and just use it like a pin. Like, it's actually good. You know?
I keep my Mark II in a little dish next to my Keen on the kitchen counter. And they are like a perfect pair.
Yeah.
I feel like they go really well together for like the things that I would want to use them for. Right. Yeah. It's like you need the quick pen and I feel like it's just there and I got it. And it's also small. So it like doesn't take up much space. Like I like they're a nice pairing.
Mm-hmm.
They also look good together.
Yeah.
You know, color wise.
Little rocks in your pocket kind of thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Yeah, my relationship with it has definitely changed, and it feels like a whole new kind of world, like breathe new life into it. And so we're going to be doing some more ads and some more like kind of lean into the marketing more and stuff on it. So yeah, it's definitely, I hope that, I mean, the Mark One is by far our biggest seller, but I think the Mark Two is really good at like what it's supposed to be. Like it's actually really good at what it's trying to be. So I think there's quite a bit more like kind of runway and growth for it, because it's just, I don't know, it's pretty good. It's cool.
Sales wise, does it go Mark One, Mark Two, Mark Three?
Yeah, for the pin stuff.
Yeah.
I don't actually know. You know, the Mark Three and the Mark Two, it's probably like that, and it will definitely probably move more in that direction. It's not crazy different though, I would say, the Mark Three or Mark Three and the Mark Two.
Mm-hmm. Mark Three rules though. I love my Mark Three so much. I tell these two all the time. I love that mechanical pencil so much. I've never loved a mechanical pencil before. I love that mechanical pencil. I don't even know, like, I can't tell you what, like, it isn't like it's better because of this, because like there are mechanical pencils that have like knockout features, like the Kuratoga, right? The one where
it rotates and stuff. Yeah.
Rotates it so like the lead is always the same thickness. It's very clever. You know, so it's not like, oh, it's because of this, or it's not like, oh, because like, you know, I love the Mark One because of the knock, right? Like that's like a defined feature it has. I think it's just the slightness and the texture. I think those two things, and I guess just like the overall weight and balance, it's just like this perfect pick up and use implement. And I also think in that respect, because it's a pencil, it doesn't need, I don't need to worry about it drying out, or I don't need detract it. Yeah. It's just there. Like I have it next to my Sidekick notepad all the time. Like whenever I'm like at my main desk, and it's the thing I use most. Mm-hmm. I use the Mark III more than any other pen or pencil that
that's
I own.
Awesome.
Because I use it every single day, all day. I'm using it to take any note that I have at my desk. I love it. I just think it's great.
Yeah, I think it's, so I think the fact that it's like a little bit girthier than a mechanical pencil normally, and just, it's just so smooth, like in terms of its body, you know. I mean, like, I really like the whatchamacallit them, the fancy, the Rotring, like, whatever those are called.
The 600s.
Yeah,
they look cool. The 600s are, like, the best.
Yeah, it's just the knurling and stuff, though, gets uncomfortable. You know, it's like, do you really need to grip this thing like it's like this, a handlebar? Like,
I think sometimes I can forget just how nice and important the Cerakote coating is, and how kind of unique that is, because it is so expensive to do compared to other methods, and kind of fraught in some ways, like depending on the color, like, and so it's good to be reminded of like the pain is kind of worth it, because it's like, oh, this actually
it is the success. Like when people buy one of your writing implements and they use it and they like it, I genuinely think the key thing is the Cerakote. It's so different feeling, and you don't like, so you get something soft, something that's not cold, but you, because it can be coated to anything, the pen still has weight, which is important for like how something feels, and also a perception of value, right? Like, you know, there's still that there. Like, so yeah, I think it makes a huge difference, a massive difference. Like the Cerakote was a great choice. Yeah.
Well, it's
like,
funny. We could
way to apply color.
We could do black anodized that, like in a picture, looks identical, but it will be more slick. It will have this kind of shiny slick thing to it, and
I have the Apollo Steel Mark One, which I love. It doesn't feel like the feeling of it isn't as nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But what I like about this is how heavy it is, right? Yeah. So that makes that fun because it's heavy. But, you know, and I love to use this one, but I really love the feeling of the Cerakote. And then, of course, you end up with like these incredible colors on an aluminium pen. Like, it's so much better than anodizing.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
When you have like the orange one or whatever, like the Cerakote just, I think, just always looks better. Yeah. Because it's perfect the whole way across. Like, Cerakote is wild. Like, I'm seeing it more and more now. So like in our members Discord, loads of people are Cerakoting their keyboards.
Yeah.
Like this is just like a thing that they have like a nice keyboard and they send it off for Cerakoting. And like, yeah. So because a friend of mine, Ian, he loves the Cortex Mark One, the blue one.
Uh-huh.
And so I gave him the color the value formula of that. Yeah. Because so he coated a keyboard in that color now. I want to do it. I feel like I should be the one to have done that.
Wait a minute.
I've yet to do that.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Cerakote is great. It's weird, but it's really great.
Yeah. It's good to hear because it is a real pain. It's like I know how I could increase the margin or drop the price on our product pretty significantly. I know exactly how I could do that, but then we lose all the customization. Like, there's so many things that are unique about it that we can do that, make it worth it. But it is a pain, but we have an awesome supplier. That's the thing.
Is the coating how thick is the
Cerakote? Really thin. It's like half a thou to a thousandth of an inch, like really thin. So the thing that's interesting about Cerakote is like it's really tough and abrasion resistant, but it's very thin. So like if you drop it on concrete, you can scrape it off because you actually just take the metal off, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it's the way the thing is so tricky about Cerakote is the surface preparation is everything because the way the surface is prepared allows the Cerakote to like adhere with a thin film on it. And so that's why like the thickness of the coating really changes how something looks in these subtle ways. Like we have these really crisp chamfers and features. And the coating being really thin accentuates those. But if we had like a thick coating of even like a couple mils, not millimeters, but like mils, like a couple thousandths of an inch, it would round off everything. And it changes how everything looks. Anodizing is also really crazy thin too. But you just don't have as near as much control. You can't control the really sheen or anything like that.
The reason the Cortex logo on those pens looks as good as it does is because of the thinness of the Cerakote. If it started to get thicker, it would start to
like fill in and fill like in it wouldn't
and
work.
Puff up and not look good.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of incredible that it looks as crisp as it does. Like to have something, because it's so small. it's so small. But yeah, I guess so. The surface went like the surface preparation. Are they like
sandblasting it?
It's like sandblasted, so it has to be a little rough.
So it's not only sandblasted, but it's like media blasted with a very specific grit, very specific pressure, and then you have to like be cleaning this grit constantly and like dehumidifying it. There's this whole process for the setup, and if you don't do that correctly, like I can do that at my like garage. I have a little sandblaster, and I can spray Cerakote, and it will look basically the same, but it won't be as durable because I didn't like follow the prep steps properly. And then the other crazy thing about Cerakote is it's a oven cure, or the kind we use is oven cure. And so, but it's not just oven cure. Like they first flash and like off gas, and that changes the sheen level. And then you put it in the oven, and that changes the sheen level. And then the shelf life of the Cerakote changes the sheen level. And then how you mix it, there's these two parts you mix together. So it's just very meticulous. It requires like a lot of meticulous attention to A, get it to perform and look consistent. And so our supplier is just awesome and is like cares more than us, if you can believe it or not, about like every little thing about it. So
from the way you describe that though, what it tells me is that if you have someone that knows how to do it, you have a lot of flexibility, right? Because I guess if you dialed any of those things up or down, you can change the way that the finish looks. Right, with the sheen.
Totally, yeah. Now, you can't go crazy. Like the black we use is kind of like more of a matte black. You can't make it like super glossy. Like you have to use a different base color. But yeah, you have sheen control. And then the cool thing is about Cerakote is like you can just mix it like paint. And so like, you know, like we're actually trying to figure out a formula right now for a color. And it's like, okay, first you got to decide the color and then we got to figure out the formula to get it. But then once you do, it's like rock solid. And so yeah, it's a great material and it's good, but it is just it's pricey. You can't batch do it exactly. I mean, you can kind of, but not really. It's like hard.
Dan, we had a request from a listener. His name's Stephen.
Stephen H.
Stephen H. wrote in
H.
In response to a post that you put on Threads where it appears, you say, I'm building my first guitar.
Yeah.
Can you talk about what you're doing? What's going on here?
Well, I think there comes a time in every man's life when they have to decide what their midlife crisis hobby is going to be. And so I think I've landed on guitar. It's what I'm going to be doing.
Wait, what does that mean? Guitar playing, building,
just guitar as a premise. So that's what's been so cool about this odyssey is I've like realized there's so much like fun little hobbyist aspects to get into. So just like a brief history, like I kind of played guitar like in high school and college, but by kind of played guitar, I mean I would look up tabs online and learn how to play them and then play them, but no actual foundational learning of like how to play, and then kind of sat dormant for a decade or so and then decided to pick it back up again and, you know, kind of do it properly, trying to learn, you know, actual music theory and how all this stuff makes sense on the fretboard and whatnot. And in doing that, I kind of revitalized my like entry level Squire Stratocaster that had been, you know, sitting in a bag for a decade. And it sent me down this rabbit hole of like, the pickups didn't work. And it's like, oh, I need to like replace these. And then I had to learn about like wiring and how to do that. And then it's like, oh, I want to like improve the tuning stability. How do I do that? And then it just made me realize, it's like, oh, this is a whole hobby unto itself. Even if you're not playing at all, you can like build guitars. And there's so many different levels to it. Like you can buy a guitar off the shelf and like modify it slightly. You can like build every component of it from scratch, or you can kind of go in the middle, which is what I'm doing, where it's like, you're buying these raw parts, like an unfinished body and like a neck and stuff. And then you're like finishing them and assembling them and putting it all together and making every choice along the way of to suit your preferences. So I'm having a lot of fun. It's extremely gratifying and satisfying. And what's also really cool about it is, this has happened a few times in my life where I like start to become interested in a hobby or get into something. And it's like, oh man, there's like a whole community out here that's established and knows all the answers to every question I might have. So it's like, yeah, this is new to me, but it's not new to, this is decades old. These problems have been solved decades ago. And I'll like do Google searches and the results will be like, honest to God message boards, like early aught looking message boards that are like up to date and people are still like using and reply to. Yep. It's like, oh man, I love this so much. It feels like 2002. It's because I'm sure it's just a bunch of like 50-year-old dudes that like never got off message boards. Like they've just been hanging around there. So it's been a lot of fun and I found it to be quite gratifying.
Do you have a plan for the entire build, or are you finding bits as you go along that you're adding to it? You know what
I
mean?
Yeah, I have a plan that I'm currently in the midst of executing, but it's been a long process to figure out what exactly what I want it to be, because I was kind of hemming and hawing and going back and forth and not quite knowing what I wanted. And then I actually like have bought two guitars and returned them during this process because they weren't quite what I wanted. And what's interesting from my perspective and how I'm approaching it is, and this is probably obvious if you know me or know me as a designer, is I'm not optimizing for tone. Like I'm not being super fussy about, oh, it's got to be this perfect pickup or whatever. It's all about ergonomics and playability. So I'm doing kind of weird things. So like if anyone plays guitar or knows guitar, like I'm putting P90 pickups into a Stratocaster body, which is like
What?
Not, yeah, I know. Can you believe it?
How dare.
That's like kind of a little bit strange. I mean, it's not unheard of. You could go and buy a guitar in that configuration, like off the shelf, but it's is not typically what you would see. But it's because I'm optimizing for A, like the comfort of the Stratocaster body, and then B, this weird thing that I discovered where like I want a region in the middle that doesn't have a pickup, like where I'm strumming, which is like a very specific thing that probably a lot of people don't care about, but I realized I care about it. So I ended up in this place of this kind of like Frankenstein guitar that is kind of incoherent in some ways or seems a little bit strange, but that's what's so cool about it is no one can tell you can't do that. Like you're building the thing yourself. Yeah. There's no rules really. And so it's been really fun.
Are you going to finish it? Like in a color, like would you have like an idea?
Listeners can't see this, but this is already finished. Like I just put a stain on it, but it's like a satin, like it's Tom. It's a Rubio monocoque.
I was going to ask. It's Rubio monocoque. It looks all weird in your camera. It looks opaque, but it's just this picture is representative, right?
Yeah. So this is.
Is it like a cherry or ash body?
It's alder. It's an alder body.
Alder. Okay.
With like a bourbon is the name of the Rubio color. So that was like also one decision I made is like, I like these kind of natural wood, and I like to be not a super glossy.
It wasn't. I'd seen this picture a few times. I had it open, and it wasn't until you just picked it up and showed it to me on camera that I realized that like the pieces where you've got the copper in, they're actually holes in the wood. I thought that it was like tape stuck on.
This is a cavity. Small image. So this is where the like knobs and electronics go for the pickups.
Is it for feedback? Do you ground that tape or something?
Yeah. So you're basically kind of making like a Faraday cage type thing
feedback.
Pictures in the show notes.
Yeah, pictures in the show notes. And then there's like everything is grounded. Within.
So you're going for an au naturel design with the wood like this one.
Au naturel. I've like a black matte pickguard. I think that'll be cool. It's really
and this will be a guitar for playing.
I plan to play it. Yeah.
It's for playing. Okay.
That's the idea.
No, but like you could this could be something that you that is like you've built it and it's like the special occasion kind of, like it's like the it's more of a display.
No, this will be pretty much my only guitar because one of the learnings of kind of revitalizing my kind of beginner guitar that I had 20 years ago is the neck is too narrow for my hands. Like
you don't have no child hands anymore.
I'm not a child. I'm not a beginner. And so
I'm a big man and I need a man's
exactly.
guitar.
And so at the very least, I was like, well, I should replace the neck on this. But then, I went down the rabbit hole.
Just
build this whole thing.
It's cool, man. Yeah. I endorse your midlife crisis hobby. It's a good one.
Yeah. I mean, it could be, there are many more expensive. I could get into classic cars or something, mechanical watches. This seems like a pretty tame.
Dan pulls up in a Lambo.
Well, I mean, I'm sure there is a world in which a guitar can get very, very expensive too.
It can indeed. Yeah. But I think I'm staying pretty reasonable so far. So we'll see.
Unless this opens up, like, now you're like, oh, no, I want to build a car now.
Yeah.
The guitar wasn't enough. I need more.
Yeah.
So I'm going to build a classic car. 68 Ford out in the garage.
Fast forward a year, Dan's going to be like, okay, I got some guitar products we need to make.
Another thing that is cool about kind of dipping my toes into this world is there are lots of kind of studio neat style companies that make these boutique things that fill in the gaps that Fender or Gibson or whoever aren't catering to. So like I bought some pickups for this guitar that are like, the box says handmade in the USA. They're like a Washington based company that like makes these pickups that seemed cool. And there's like things like that where, these little companies pop up to fill these needs. And so that feels really cool too.
Often when I see things like that, I'm always struck by, it sounds so weird, but the amount of businesses that can exist in the world, and like, and it provides a living for an amount of people.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's 2 or 12, right? You know, like it's wild how you can have like multiple, and you would have multiple competing companies who make artisanal guitar pickups. There's just a thing that will exist in the world, and they're out there and they've got employees and they're doing the whole thing. Like it's kind of incredible, really.
It's like the bike world is like that too. Road and mountain bike, it's like very similar.
And like with something like biking, you've got not just the companies that are set up to make the bikes or the bike parts, but all of the accessories.
Yeah, no, it's accessories, you know, like stems, all kinds of stuff. Yeah, I mean, it's cool. I mean, buckle up too. I think that's only going to go one direction, in my opinion. Like,
yeah, you're going to get more. There's going to be, in a year from now, there'll be a second guitar for sure. For sure there will be. Because like, this is what happened to me with keyboards, right? Where it's like, oh, I saw this one that I really liked and I got it. And then I just became, through my own actions and through the algorithms, like more and more content served to me. And then it was like, oh, I like the way that, and then you just, you know, you're going down it. Because I have no doubt that if I looked at your Instagram right now, there's a few new accounts that you're following for guitar stuff. Yeah. And like, this is just how these hobbies go, right? Like, I would say I've really cooled, like my keyboard stuff is like cooled down now. Good. Like, I had a peak and I like was buying loads of stuff. A lot of it bought in 2020, arrived in 2024. No exaggeration. There were some issues. But now, like, I do actually feel like I still add some little bits to my collection here and there, but I do feel like I've kind of settled into like what I like, and I feel very comfortable in that. And so like, I'm still very active in seeing what's new and what's available, but I've settled into my preferences.
Yeah. I think there's actually tons of analogies, between guitars and keyboards. Are you ever soldering stuff?
Yeah. I learned to solder because of it, which I love that. Like I feel like I learned a little bit about electronics, and also the main thing I learned was not to be scared of them. Because I think I've said this on this show before, like the thing that I love about doing that is like actually how messy and clumsy you can be, and the electronics are totally fine with it, which that is counter to the way that I would imagine something like that would work.
Likely not true for guitar stuff, I'm guessing. If you're a real tone hound, I imagine it matters some.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, I don't know if you're speaking more to just like, to me, soldering feels so sloppy to me.
The soldering is particularly the thing that I notice. Cool. Like, that, you know, people are like, oh, there's a good way to do it, but you just really got to do is get these two things to touch. Yeah. It's like, I'm sure it should be a bit more precise than that.
As a person that's done a lot of soldering in my life,
I don't think it is sloppy. I think it feels sloppy. It feels like you're it's like heat this thing up and then like jam this solder in there and like you won't be able to really see what's happening. You know, the smoke will clear.
Hope you've done it right.
But what's cool, what I like about guitar wiring is it like it really seems like the most approachable soldering project you could imagine to actually get something that is like useful that you want, not just like soldering a LED light or something. Because I'm not talking about like making pickups and stuff, which is like winding wire and doing all this stuff. It's like soldering, you know, pickups to a switch and to a volume, you know, potentiometer. And
I expect it is incredibly similar to keyboard soldering. Because you're essentially like, you just have these pins and these pads, and you just have to lock them together. Like, that's what you're doing. And because as well, like, there are a lot of like rotary dials and stuff in keyboards, right? So, like, and, you know, you've got your four little pins, you just have to solder them to the circuit board, and that's it.
Yeah. And there's like this lesson I continue to learn where your like affinity for something is just exponentially increased if you have a hand in creating it.
or you kind of, you know, like this guitar, I'm going to know everything about it because I've like examined and touched every component of it. Mm-hmm. So that like intimacy with it, I think will feel really nice, and it like creates an affinity like right off the gate before I've even played it.
Well, and you can repair it. Like like you could order extra parts, like a couple sets of things, and be like, this will work for forever. Like mm-hmm. I can keep doing this for forever. Like,
can you have the guitar of Theseus?
Yes.
That's right.
That's what you end up with.
Yeah.
Dan, are you going all the way and getting like shrink stuff for the over the solders and going all the way?
Or no, I'm not. I haven't. I just watched a video last night where the guy was doing that, and I was like, do I need to be doing this?
It'll be fine, but it just is like up your alley, I think, of just like doing it like all the way.
Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, I have the wires I bought are nice kind of like cloth pushback mm-hmm. wires, so they're like gonna be pretty clean. But yeah, the shrink tubing is like, yeah, I was literally thinking of that yesterday. Like, is this something I have to do now?
Well, the Rubio Monocoat, you're probably pretty innovative using Rubio Monocoat on your guitars.
Yeah, maybe.
What is Rubio Monocoat? What is that?
It's a wood finish. For anyone listening out there, especially if you're like a hobbyist.
For any of you woodheads out there.
Rubio Monocoat is what you want to use to stain and finish wood, period, full stop. It's expensive, mm-hmm. but it's like kind of idiot proof and comes in tons of colors, and it's like awesome stuff.
Yeah.
Look at this.
Yeah,
Rubio Monocoat.
I went from a person that actively disliked staining things to like preferring to stain things. That's like my first, if I have like a project that needs a finish.
Easier than painting.
Yeah, it's easier than painting. It's really goes on really easily and cleanly.
I just, went to rubiomonocoat.co.uk and sent the URL to my wife. I know that she'll appreciate that.
Yeah,
fact.
No, there's like lots. There's more colors than any stain place I've ever seen. It's the easiest to apply. It's like great. It's was made for floors originally, so it's really tough. You can repair it. That's the biggest thing. You can repair it without recoating everything. So it's good.
There's your patented, thoroughly considered top tip of the episode.
<That's> right.
We have one every time. Every time, there's always one. That was
brought to you by Tom's YouTube video obsession from a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
I've moved on now.
I can see you boot your guitars. You've got the guitars behind you.
Oh, yeah. I have very cheap guitars. I have a green guitar from high school and then a really cheap electric guitar. I have a nicer acoustic classical guitar, but it's not in here.
Do you think seeing Dan build a guitar will make you want to build a guitar?
No, I think I'm actually a little bit getting out of the phase of building stuff.
Well, what's your midlife crisis hobby going to be?
Uh-oh. Yeah, I don't know what my midlife crisis is going to be. But yeah, I think I'm actually, I got a lot of that. I mean, it's literally all I've done for 30 years. Mm-hmm. And so I know how to build almost everything, but I don't know. Somehow I'm kind of wanting to move away from that a little bit, which is interesting. Even though I have like a pile of cinder blocks in my front yard right now that I shouldn't be building the cinder block wall, but the last gasps, hopefully of that kind of stuff.
Thoroughly Considered is a joint production between Relay FM and Studio Neat. You can find out more about this episode by going to relay.fm/tc/110.